It's got a death curse.
Don't all of you be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
And welcome back to another Horror 101 episode where we're educating your fears. This is your host, Cash Wampum. Before we get started, how was your Halloween? Did your hills run red with blood? Did you conjure any demons? Maybe you killed a sister or two while she's up in her bedroom? I don't know how yours went, but around here we had a ball.
Happy Halloween!
Screw you!
We only got maybe 70, 80 kids. Usually we get more than 100 because it was rainy, fucking cold. It was like, we had the candy outside. The chocolate bars by the end when we brought it in about 8:30 were frozen. That's how cold it was.
Nothing's going on except kids playing pranks, trick-or-treating, parking, getting high. I have the feeling that you're way off on this.
There was always the young ones, though, like 5, 6 years old with their parents that would just not come. Because there's like 8 of us all done up. You know, I got the mask on and the trench coat and the Freddy glove on. And Jolene looked good and Michael had the mask on. Everybody was done up. There was some kids that just approached the house, looked at the web, looked at the spider, looked at all of us and went, fuck that. I ain't going anywhere near that house.
There was a couple of them. So I'm sitting there with the camera ready to take pictures and video of it. And as soon as they see all of you, then they look at me with the camera. One of them actually crossed the street.
I'm not afraid. Fool. I'm not. Then go in.
A nude. She's done up like child's play. She had the fucking blue contacts in. And right. As long as I've known her, I was
so wrong.
I know.
I disagree.
She's always been my brown-eyed girl. Renewed has always been my brown-eyed girl. So she's like, how do I look? She's looking at me with these blue eyes. I'm like, take those out of your fucking skull.
It's your blue-eyed boy.
No.
Hey, Lonnie, get your ass away from there.
You actually had a trick-or-treating first this year. You had never seen this before.
No. Tony had, it was like a hazmat suit on with the mask, right? Mm-hmm. It almost looked like a hockey mask with long frizzy hair coming out of it. He sat in a chair on the front, right, kind of hidden inside the net. If the kids were too young, he wouldn't move. But when the kids that were 9, 10, 11 were coming, he'd jump out of the chair and he'd start running after them. And a couple people just wouldn't move. They'd freeze and then he'd just veer off and that was the end of it. But a couple people actually just screamed and ran. There was one girl that ran, like, I was counting the houses, and I'm like, okay, 6, 7, 8 houses away, still hightailing it down the street.
No kidding.
But he scared this one girl. He jumped out of the chair, ran after her. She goes screaming onto the street, and she's running down the street. And she had dumped her fucking bag of candy. She dumped it. Like, she abandoned everything. And I'm like, success. That's what Halloween is about right there.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. She went all scaring the candy out of the fucking little whippers.
She went all Top Gun. It's like, flare, flare, flare.
We packed it up, what was it, about 8:30?
Yep.
8:30, yep. Because the kids were starting to get sparse. It had already been real fucking cold. The rain started coming in. I'm like, okay, that's it. Let's go inside and drink. And the rest is fucking history.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Happy Halloween.
So what do we have for you this time? I came up with an idea for the 38th show. And helping me tonight, we have the world famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, and special guest, please welcome the ironclad Jeff Scott. Jeff Scott!
Mr. Scott.
Greetings.
Mr. Scott, ahead. Warp Factor 4.
Grab a beer out of the fridge if you want. I brought some.
So this show, number 38, I'm thinking, well, what are we going to do for 38? And I'm trying to piece together, well, how is 38 significant?
And as lame as this sounds, it just hit me. Well, I'm 38, so what can we do with that? Well, let's focus on something from 38 years ago, the year I was born, I believe the year you were born as well. 1976. The obvious choice would be The Omen. But we've already covered The Omen when we did The Omen Trilogy, like, years ago. So what else did we have? And I remembered this little movie, the snoozer film that I haven't seen in at least 10 years. I remember watching this with Nude a long time ago. And I remember, for some reason, I enjoyed it. There was an element about it that I enjoyed. And it was called Alice, Sweet Alice. It was from 1976. It's a very obscure film. I think it's out of print right now. You can find it on YouTube. If you look up Alice, Sweet Alice, you can find the entire full movie on YouTube. So it is out there, but you can't buy it anymore. You can't buy it on VHS. You can't buy it on DVD. You might be able to find it on Amazon or something. It's a sleeper. I'm thinking, my God, this would be perfect. I'm pretty sure... Consult the Oracle on Alice, Sweet Alice, 1976, please. I'm pretty sure this was Brooke Shields' first movie. This was the big shining light of Alice, Sweet Alice, that Brooke Shields was in it. But she was like 12 at the time. She was very young. This was way before Blue Lagoon. You know, so she's not prancing around in Almost Nothing or anything. But this was, I'm pretty sure this was her first movie.
You are correct. This is Brooke Shields' first movie.
Brooke Shields' first movie. No kidding. Nice and done, Mr. Patterson.
Okay. It's 9 o'clock now. I don't know how long everybody's gotten. So
I'm good.
We should watch this now, because if you guys hate it, we can't do a show on it. There so let's watch it now.
All right.
And we'll see what's going on. Okay, let me just pause this.
Do it now.
Alice, Sweet Alice is an Alfred Soul film starring Paula Shepherd and, of course, Brooke Shields. It's also known as Communion, and some people may know it as Holy Terror. It's a vicious little whodunit featuring some blatant giallo imagery, especially when the killer is concerned. It's loaded with Catholic imagery, and it makes the viewer question, can a child really be a serial killer? And after watching the film, the crew was left with an interesting conundrum.
How the fuck do we cover this movie in any conventional sense without spoiling the fuck out of a whodunit?
Yeah, pretty much.
We'll get to that later. The film opens up with Alice and her younger sister, Karen. It's clear from the start that Karen is the doted little angelic girl, and her slightly older sister is more or less treated as a nuisance. What better reason is there to treat your younger sibling with contempt and cruelty?
Mommy! Mommy! What is it? What did she do to you now? Are you
all right? The scene that I really liked, and it was very quick, was when Karen was chasing Alice when Alice had the mask on and she's running into that derelict factory there.
Right, right.
Alice, where are you? Why are you running away from me?
And when she finally comes to Alice, Alice rips her own mask off to reveal another mask underneath.
Yes.
And then she tells her, I told you never to follow me here, and then she slams the door on her.
Where's my dog?
So right from the start, Alice is a jealous, vulgar, nasty little child. He seems to take great pleasure in tormenting her sister. And she has a habit of prancing around her apartment in a yellow hooded school coat, donning a creepy translucent mask. So imagine our surprise when, on the day of her first communion, Karen is attacked by a petite figure donning the same disguise, strangled to death, and burned in a Catholic pew, right in church. Say bye-bye, Brooke Shields.
A whodunit that features children suspects?
What were you saying about child endangerment?
That's it. Children aren't supposed to cause the danger, although there is quite a precedent in horror for children causing mayhem. Because this is something we want to talk about. We kind of brought it up while we were watching it. But how many horror films do you have the principal threat, let's call it, as a child? I mean, there aren't too many, but there's a lot of famous ones.
The Good Son, mentioned with Macaulay Culkin.
The Omen. Mm-hmm.
But I don't look at The Omen as a child as much as I do the Antichrist.
So, I mean, it's going to be very rare to have a child threat in a non-supernatural horror film.
Who are these people? Friends of yours, huh?
That is not going in the podcast.
But if you think about it, every time a child is seen in horror film in a threatening way, it's always supernatural. They're fucking a spirit, or they're demonically possessed, or they're the Antichrist. But children in and of themselves are never threatening. Like I say, Good Son is probably one of the few that I can think of.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's true. Most movies featuring homicidal children are usually due to some supernatural influence. Halloween, Village of the Damned, The Exorcist. But what about the films where normal kids just go bad? Children of the Corn, The Good Son, Nightmare in a Damaged Brain. Normal kids leading normal lives until one day, they're out to get you. Is that what we have here with Alice, Sweet Alice? All the evidence points to this little girl as the killer. And even worse than that, watching her parents suffer a loss and have to come to terms that their only child left might be a nutball.
Stop it! I won't listen to this again!
All the photographers at the church. The police do investigate a murder, you know.
I still don't understand what that has to do with Alice.
Everyone knew she was the last one in the church. What if the police find out about the veil?
Jim, what are you talking about?
She had Karen's veil in her pocket.
For Christ's sake, she probably found it on the floor.
Annie, why'd you have to start this? Gone too far.
Shut up, I know what I'm doing.
The aunt there, you know who she reminded me of? And it's not her, because if I'd have seen her in the credits, I'd have recognized the name. But her name is like Carolyn Gordon Purdy, or Catherine Gordon Purdy, Stuart Gordon's wife. She was in The Pit and the Pendulum. She was, they burnt her for witchcraft. She was in Dolls. She was the stepmother that was a bitch. She was in Reanimator. She was the bitch doctor that was thwarting all their shit. She was in From Beyond. She was also a doctor in that. And Stuart Gordon always casted his
Carolyn
wife.
Carolyn Purdy Gordon.
Thank you.
And like Carolyn Purdy Gordon's characters, this woman is about to take some serious damage.
Alice!
I did like the stare attack, just the way they played it out, like the whole, you know, the eyes through that, those that is a freaky mask. Yeah. Like, it's kind of semi-translucent, so you're still seeing the face through it, but it's got the markings and the things, so just
the eyes shine through,
but just the eyes in that one shot, like, you know, the whole, like, looking out of the corner of the eyes, like, as the stairs, as whoever's coming down. That, honestly, was probably the best shot seen in the whole movie.
Speaking of the attack on the anther, you must have loved the stab through the foot. I mean, come
on. Oh, yeah.
Your foot trauma.
Right into the...
That was deep.
She had one in the leg and another one in the foot. There was
one,
a...
Right, two, the last two, one was two through in the leg, foot. Right?
Through the foot.
And then she ran off.
There was two in the leg and then the one in the foot.
Yeah, there was two in the leg and one in the foot.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The foot was the last hit before she ran off.
Yeah.
Those that do talk about this, the buzz is... the staircase attack. That is the creme de la creme of this movie.
All right, what's going on here?
She's like my own. I love her, Catherine.
You hate her because you knew I was pregnant when I got married.
That's not true. I love Alice. Because I'd be dead if I'm lying.
You don't. You realize what you're saying?
It was Alice. It was Alice!
Liar! Liar! You're all liars!
I'm not lying! I'm not lying!
As much as I hated her, like, her character, when she was in the bed, that was some of the best acting in the whole movie.
Yeah.
When she's pleading for her freaking life, and her sister's saying, don't betray me, don't betray me. I was like, wow, that was probably the best performance of the whole movie, was that sequence of her laying in the bed, just in absolute tears and shock. Like, it seemed legit. I think they must have just, before rolling, just beat the shit out of her and got her worked up before they started rolling.
Not just that, but technically, the movie was shot beautifully. Just like when she's in the hospital, the first thing you see is the doctor changing the whatever was in that bottle. And you can see the IV coming out of her arm, and it was ebbing blood as he was attaching this thing.
Right.
Like, there's damage there. This poor lady, you know, it was just, they set it up well. She's all pale, and she's scared, and she's knocked out, and then as soon as she's surrounded by people, hysterical. It was, you know, it was well done.
You don't like your aunt, do you?
I don't like you.
You know why you don't like us. Your aunt and I are two very perceptive people. We know what you did at the church. I can't wait to tell your father all I know about you.
What the hell do you know?
Come on, the check.
The landlord was just putrid. Like, I'm trying to think of another character that just oozes putrescence like that. Like, yeah. It was like Maniac when we said, like, Joe Spinell there. Like, you think you can almost smell the character on the screen. He's just that. And it was that to the nth degree. This guy is so obese. Like, like Nick said, when we watched the film, the crotch stain on this guy was just like, what the fuck is that?
Thank you for the improved definition, by the way, because we needed to see the contours of that crotch stain.
You know, like,
so clearly.
The guy turns around, he's got this big stain on his crotch, and you're like, okay, did he piss himself and he's just sitting in it? Did he spill something on his gut or something? What the fuck is that? He was morbidly obese, he was pale, he was sweaty, and of course they throw the guy in a wife beater.
Where are you going? You're not in a rush, are you? I know what you have downstairs.
You've been snooping through my things.
Your things? They're not your things. Garen will come for them. The dead have ways. The dead don't rest easy.
His dialogue was all, like, pederast and just strange. And at the same time, they try to write it as kind of ominous, and he has this rather flat delivery that just is off-putting.
Oh, he's creepy.
All his lines, yeah.
He's definitely creepy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But he's like...
He's not the threat.
No, he's like the spot of circus people.
So with their aunt in the hospital screaming bloody murder, it looks like Alice is caught with the smoking gun. So while we wait for her ass to be carted to the police station for questioning, let's take a pause to insert Mr. Stewart's ever-present Hitchcock observations in this film.
Watch this. Nefarious Paul Beale will have something to say about this.
No, and I know where you're going, and you have every right to say this. Go ahead and say
There are legitimate Hitchcock references in this movie, and definite ties to Psycho. Movie is set in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
Psycho comes out in 1960. We see a blatant Psycho movie poster at the bus stop behind the main action.
And the giant fucking kitchen knife.
All the number of knives being held the same way. Even the music is reminiscent of the Psycho strings. Yeah. But and it's actually kind of interesting that they would use that detail because, let's face it, in 1961, Psycho still would have been in theaters in those days. Those posters would still be seen.
Somebody flushed a toilet and you were all over it.
There was twice a toilet lately seen. When she's sitting at the kitchen table, you can see the washroom in the back and the toilet behind her. Probably featured center frame, because that was the big thing about Psycho, that the toilet was finally seen in film. And it kind of made people uneasy. And there was also that one shot, the killer's going up the stairs, and then they show the exterior shot of the building, and they're backing away. And that is right out of Frenzy, which happened just 2 years previous. So, definite ties there.
And usually, Brian, you're usually reaching when you're looking at your references, but this one I will give you. Blatant... And it was supposed to be there. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, let's get to these questions, shall we, Alice?
Now, do you intend to answer truthfully to every question? Please, answer yes or no.
Yes.
Do you know for sure who stabbed your aunt?
No.
Did you stab your aunt?
No.
In the suitcase found in the basement were a white dress and a mask. Are they yours?
Yes.
Are you deliberately withholding any information regarding the attack on your aunt?
No.
Do you know who stabbed your aunt?
No.
Do you know who stabbed your aunt?
Yes, it was Karen. I told him it was Karen, but no one believed me.
And there's a part of her who didn't want her. She really didn't want to say what she'd seen, and she wasn't dishonest. And we think dishonest is because of criminal intent or because she's just rotten. She's just pure evil. But no, I think it very cleverly spins our expectations, and it's almost one hell of a frame job the way this movie's constructed.
Well, at the end there is, because the hints they drop throughout the movie, there's, if it was, albeit either written and directed slightly better, they could have spun the ending off to be a little more convincing. Because they even say, you know, like, when the father's talking to the priest, she's very good at making things look like accidents.
Right.
Almost making it seem like she's not a psychopath, she's a sociopath.
Alice has many deep-seated problems. but she is not a murderer.
Alice needs psychological help. Why did Alice conceal from you the fact that she's begun menstruating? Parents so often don't know their children as well as they presume.
One critique of this movie, and I think it's more of a missed opportunity, is that you don't get any time with Alice in the institution, in the halfway house for troubled teens there. I would like to have seen what she was going through while she was there. She's this quote-unquote dangerous, murderous character.
And they had so many opportunities to make this a better movie, and they went off in weird-ass directions. Like, they didn't know what they wanted to do.
Yeah, if the whole point is that we're supposed to be terrified and suspicious and wonder what's going on, putting her in a room with other kids and having them closely watch her, wondering what she's going to do if she's going to try and attack one of the other kids, is a missed opportunity. That would have been a great scene.
Well, the thing is, if she's supposed to be like a sociopath, a manipulator, you know, causing accidents,
right,
have it after she was there.
Personally, you know, if the movie had gone in that direction for the rest of the film, it would have been 10 times better than what we got.
There we go. We got a
sequel.
License the rights. Make a better fucking script.
Seeing her,
and I honestly think the mom was doing the priest.
I mean, honestly, putting her...
Well, the maid turned around and made that comment, too.
The whore!
Yes.
Oh, yeah. not in so many words, but...
For the first half of the movie, kills her sister, kills or attacks the aunt,
yep,
and then put her in an enclosed institution with other kids for the rest of the film, and just let people's wheels turn. It's gold. I don't know how they missed that.
And while Alice is institutionalized, her father follows a hooded, masked figure into that derelict factory. Guess what happens next?
You don't have to be afraid of me.
You know what this means, don't you?
Alice did fuck all!
Yeah, they just assumed she was because she was nuts and she had the psychologist reports because she was antisocial towards her sister.
How the fuck do we cover this movie in any conventional sense without spoiling the fuck out of a whodunit?
There's that conundrum I was talking about.
When the killer actually pushed the dad out the window.
Oh, yeah?
The way he landed, and the glass underneath the head and that, yeah, that was done nicely.
Obviously, there's going to be spoilers because by the end of this show, people are going to know that Alice is not the killer. The charm of this movie is setting it up that you spend most of this film thinking, is this little girl killing people? It certainly seems that way. What we can't do is disclose the actual killer.
No.
Let's not do that because okay, we know that Alice isn't the killer. Even though it's setting it up that way, let us not disclose who the actual killer is.
We won't disclose the killers, but the obvious suspects are also kind of in question, too. And I can't really talk about it without revealing too much.
I know.
Mm-hmm. But there are people whom we suspect, and when the killer is revealed, I think we're still surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure out as to what the motive was.
Right.
Where's Daddy?
He had to go back. He didn't even say goodbye. Please don't feel that way. He kept his promise to you. It's because of him you're coming home.
There's parts of the movies where I think that they put Paula Shepherd, the girl that played Alice, behind the mm-hmm. mask.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even though that's not the character. I think that there were scenes where I'm looking at the eyes and I think that it's her.
Well, she has exactly. I did the same thing.
You know what? Yeah. I just thought of this now. Rather cleverly, every time there's a knife attack, it's always done in such a way that it kind of obscures the actual height of the killer. Always on stairs or reaching over a railing or through the stairs as they're coming down. So you never get the side-by-side comparison with two people on the same floor.
Lots of theism, lots of Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
very religious film. Like, even from the get-go. I mean, got the priest involved with the family, a lot of religious icons, a lot of church, and it ends in church, too. The end was solid, I have to say. Right. The end was solid.
Great shot at the end.
I would agree. Yes. When she's embracing the priest and the blood
coming out of it. Yeah.
I love that last shot. That pull away shot and the glassy stare. And really, if the entire movie is all about where criminality comes from. If it's about nurture, nature, and what causes it, then that was their punctuation mark at the end of the movie. That was them putting the period at the end of the film and saying, yeah, this is what we think. Because it's pretty clear where the... And it's kind of cool in a way. It kind of reminds me of a Robert Browning poem, that it's almost like her story is going to continue long after the credits roll. That there's more to this that we're waiting to see. And what's unusual is that this didn't become some kind of franchise. This is like one horror movie that never picked up.
Mm-hmm.
No sequels. I mean, no one's probably ever going to see this movie on Blu-ray or released ever again unless it gets remade. Which is a shame, because I think there's a lot of lost potential.
She is a weird little girl. Notice her tits? When I went to put the tube around her, she looked up at me like she wanted me to feel her up.
Hey, the little bitch is dumping your machine.
The girl Paula Shepherd, who plays Alice, was 19 when they made this film.
Wow. She looks a lot younger than that.
No kidding.
They casted a girl who was 19 that looked young. I looked her up. She's only done two movies. She did this and some piece of shit fucking movie called Liquid Sky from 1982. I'd never heard of it before, never seen it. I've seen clips of it. It's some pretentious... It was like somebody wanted to do John Waters on acid, that kind of movie. Well, it was just stupid.
John Waters is John Waters on acid.
Wow. All right, let's score this fucker, Jeff Scott.
For me, I'd go 8.
Very generous.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
One would say overly so.
No, I thought it was well done.
And I'm very interested in hearing everything you have to say. I'll be right with you.
Nick?
Me? It's 6.5. Like, the good parts that were good weren't enough to make up for all of the flaws. I still kind of enjoyed it. This is a movie that I honestly would say I would love to see somebody remake and remake properly.
I want to book her. If not for the murder, for the stabbing of her aunt. Well, let the psychiatrist give us some answers.
Brian Stewart.
I think it's going to be a solid 7. I'm with Nick. I think it's flawed, but there's a lot there that I can appreciate. Like, there's some unique horror elements here that you don't find very often in horror. Like I say, to have a child antagonist that is not supernatural, that is just psychologically screwed up, is scary on levels that we don't typically see in horror. Like mistrusting a family member. You don't usually get that outside of, Hellraiser and maybe Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt. You know, necessity, love. Someone that's supposed to be your own flesh and blood, and to have to look at them in a sinister light is terrifying. And then how do you cope with that?
One tries to suspend judgment until one can observe as much as you possibly can.
I would agree with the 7. You know, there's things about it that I don't like. It's about 1 hour and 45 minutes. It's time well spent. You know, I understand they're trying to make it look like this girl is the killer. That's not the case, but I like the characters. I remember reading reviews that people were suggesting that the mother or the aunt overdid it. I don't think that's the case. I think that everybody reacted genuine and correct. The kill scenes were good. Everything with a large kitchen knife. The stabbing was good. The blood was good. The violence was good. But I wanted more violence. I felt like this movie needed more violence.
Well, they painted themselves in a corner as soon as she got put in the child institution thing.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
She should have
spent time with kids.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard everyone leave. It's all over, huh? Well, you die and they put you in the ground. And it's over. Such a shame. Such a pretty girl, too.
God always takes the pretty ones.
And there you have it. Episode 38 featuring Alice Sweet Alice from the glorious year of 1976. Brooke Shields' first movie, directed by Alfred Soul. An interesting little slasher that's very obscure and admittedly not the best movie we've featured. But it certainly deserves to be sought out. The giallo imagery, the excellent framing, the masterful care taken with the violent attacks makes this film well worth your time. Look for it on YouTube one rainy night. We have no clue where Paula Shepherd is these days.
She disappeared after 1982 after doing only two movies, but her performance as the little disturbed Alice is memorable. Alfonso de Noble, the guy who played the filthy landlord, died 2 years after making this film. He was 31. It looks like Nick might get his wish. Director Dante Tomaselli has announced that he will be helming a remake of Alice Sweet Alice, setting it in the 70s. Apparently the script is all but done, but as of right now they are very early in the planning stage. We'll have to keep our eye on that project. We've got an interesting idea for the next episode, an idea we've been kicking around for some time now. We're proposing a family-friendly show. It will be a clean Horror 101 treatment as we focus on the dark and macabre scenes of Disney and other family-friendly films that we loved growing up. Why can't we take an opportunity to educate our listeners' children's fears as well? There will be no swearing, no sexual innuendos. Our first Horror 101 show that's good for the entire family. We hope you'll join us for that. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, and the ironclad Jeff Scott, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.